which would be a very historic victory. And hey, speaking of history, we've got Scott Washington here in the studio for another round of History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history. And Scott, we've talked about how historic the weeks have been sort of in the present, and things being the way they are. Maybe it's a good time to look back at previous this weeks in history.
I think that's always a good idea.
Maybe some better news,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Well, just to keep in mind that that there is this larger context, mm-hmm. and it's why history matters. And like, for instance, today is a pretty important day. 1941, December 7th,
yes,
is when we have Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And of course, a terrible tragedy, and it propelled America into World War II. But there's another part of this story that has a Hillsborough connection.
Okay.
And that's because to mark the 150th anniversary of the Bill of Rights, mm-hmm. in 1791, December 15th, Congress sent a note to passed a resolution and sent it to the president saying, would you do something about December 15th?
Mm-hmm.
This was right before Thanksgiving. So President Roosevelt said, wonderful. He issued a proclamation declaring December 15th, 1941, as Bill of Rights Day. And of course, Hillsborough had a particular, and we've talked about this many times, a significant role in all that. And consequently, the president did. Well, of course, what happens? We have Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And they do go ahead with Bill of Rights celebrations, but they're a little bit more muted, but suddenly it takes on a lot more significance of what we're fighting for and why the Constitution matters. And this week is particularly important because we do have this date on December 4th, 1865, is when North Carolina ratifies the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And then other states follow.
2 days later was when Georgia did it and officially ratified it.
And officially ratifies this. And, of course, President Lincoln was assassinated earlier in the spring, so he does not live to see this amendment ratified, but he was there when it was submitted.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so important. It abolishes slavery and this inhumane institution comes to an end. But, of course, it takes the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment and then finally additional civil rights cases brought before the U.S. Supreme Court. And we are still fighting these issues in such important ways. So it's a pretty important week when we look at those things that have happened.
Yep.
And it's so interesting as we've explored many times these coincidences of history, how the Congress says, let's have something about Bill of Rights Day. Roosevelt issues this proclamation, and suddenly we have Pearl Harbor, and what we're fighting for becomes so much more meaningful. And it's not just always what we're fighting against, because that's important too.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's also about what we're fighting for. And certainly if you talk to service men and women today, they know about the Constitution, they know about these amendments that are part of the Constitution. They're not separate, they are part of it. In fact, I was reminded this week when we had the repeal of Prohibition. And, was one of the amendments, was about Prohibition.
Quite a few amendments ratified this week.
That's right. But Prohibition is one of those ones that...
Well, two, I guess.
More
than the average, yeah.
But, Prohibition is one of those ones that we stop having alcohol sales, and it's a total fiasco. And then we have the repeal. So a question came up at one point in a discussion, like, can you amend amendments? And the answer is yes, because they are become part of the Constitution. They're not just an add-on.
Yep.
And I think that's an important part. And that goes back to, of course, as we've talked about many times, the original Constitution that has Article 5, which allows you to amend it. Yep. And that includes things like this.
So. This is a fascinating discussion. I did Nerd Night that the Chapel Hill Public Library and the Downtown Partnership puts on every month. Last month, it was right around this time. It was a month ago, or like the day after Election Day. So there were three of us. I was one. Tom Jensen was another. And the third speaker, who is the one that I'm going to be talking about, and now I can't off the top of my head remember what his name was, which makes this story a lot less fun. But gave a talk. It was all sort of democracy themed, and he talked about the original 13th Amendment that was proposed and passed by Congress and submitted to the states for ratification. It was a way to prevent secession from happening. It was going to officially enshrine slavery in the Constitution.
Oh, this one did not pass.
This one, did pass Congress and got submitted by the necessary majority and got submitted to the states for ratification, but then secession was in the process of happening, so it became kind of a moot point, and it never did get ratified, but it was to not only enshrine slavery into the Constitution, but there was a provision in that amendment that made it unamendable.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Which would have had
this is like tax cuts for corporations.
Exactly.
Being, quote unquote, permanent.
Yeah.
Like,
what
does that mean?
Right.
Yeah.
There was a clause in that amendment that would have made it unamendable. And is that itself unconstitutional? Can you amend the Constitution in a way that violates Article 5? That was a legitimate question that would have actually come up if this thing had been ratified. But the one and only time we'll get to say, fortunately, the South seceded, because the one silver lining from that was that the horrible amendment ended up getting tabled and never got picked back up again. And we ended up with the much better 13th Amendment 4 years later.
Now, I get to learn something, too, which is so exciting.
I learned that a month ago. And it was a fascinating story.
Yeah, I did not know that.
But it was like that was the level of discourse in 1860, 1861. Yeah.
Well, the one that does pass is a lot better version. But to try to make it so it's unamendable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's called the ultimate trying to game the system.
Right. And can you do it in like a two-step process of amending that phrase out and then amending again? It's like it's very, very odd. It raises a lot of really interesting questions there.
Well, I think that another part of that, the Constitution, this comes up in the history, is that you could go through Congress, but you could also get a quorum of states, and that's a concern because that has been rattling around.
Yeah,
to say let's do it, and then you're getting into all kind of thorny issues.
Let's have a constitutional convention, and then
what would that mean?
I mean, this would be I would not want that to happen because I like the Constitution the way it is.
Thank you.
Lo and behold, like someone supports the Constitution, but
so many people have to swear allegiance to support and defend the Constitution.
Yeah.
The
but
United
these
States.
The same people who are calling for a constitutional convention right now are the same people who will wave the Constitution in the air as a justification for whatever ideas are in their heads at any given moment. It's a little bit of a disconnect there, but I'd be almost fascinated in seeing that process trying to play out, because it would be a firsthand reminder of just how difficult the process was in the first place when the framers got together in Philadelphia and tried to create a document from scratch that they could all agree on, which they did not do. Some people walked out of the convention and ended up being anti-federalists. And then to get all 13 states to sign on to it, which never happens, like to get unanimity around something that's extremely controversial.
Well, that having a closed-door process and kind of rushing it through, and we both would say that the Electoral College was not one of the most well-thought-out ideas. It was good an idea, like check and balance, but then it became subsumed by political reality.
I have actually argued, and I do this in my Durham Tech class on American government, that the Electoral College was actually a really, really clever way of achieving the goal of having every single branch elected by a different method, right? Like direct election for the House, state appointment for the Senate, the appointment process for the Supreme Court, and then you got this weird thing for the presidency because we're out of ideas. There's nothing else.
It is. It is a really good idea.
Yeah.
And as a check and balance, and certainly, you know, with Hamilton thinking about Burr and, you know, saying that would be the most then it makes sense. But certainly Jefferson, when he doesn't get elected, even though having the popular vote and it goes to the House of Representatives for his election at one point, it makes you wonder, like, all right, was this the right method?
Yeah. Would that more of today's Republicans picked up the example from Alexander Hamilton?
Yeah.
But that's probably why Mike Pence gets booze when he walks into the musical, right? It all circles back around.
It all circles back. Well, you know,
it has to be that musical about that guy and this vice president walking in, like, of course.
But, you know, it does come down to people so many times. And this week we have some history-making people, all beginning with the letter D. And so let's think about these are ones.
I do not know where you're going.
Oh, I know. December 5th, 1901. Walt Disney is born.
Okay.
And we know what kind of contribution he's made, which is impressive. But now there's a couple other people. Now, another one is Emily Dickinson. Now, this is on December 10th, 1830. And she wrote many poems. Some of them were just very short. Almost, they would work well in a Twitter universe. I like the one that she wrote one time. It says, "Not knowing when the dawn will come, I open every door." So don't say we don't speak poetry here on
like
the History Matters.
Yeah.
And then the other one is well known to everyone who's ever had to use a library.
Yes.
Melville Dewey
is
the one who comes up with, of course, the Dewey Decimal System, which is used worldwide still today. And it is a flexible system. You can go into any of the libraries and you will find they're still using the Dewey Decimal System.
I was fascinated the first time when I was in high school. I walked into the library at Michigan State University, and I was immediately confused because it was the first library that I'd ever been in that didn't use the Dewey Decimal System. Because the colleges all use the Library of Congress system, which is completely different.
Totally different.
Yeah, but like the town public libraries, like Chapel Hill, still Dewey Decimal System.
And you're saying, where is the nonfiction section?
Yeah, where are the 600s? They're like, I get out of my store.
We have many more volumes than that, sir. Which is kind of fun. Well, those are the three D's for this week that I thought was makes it an interesting thing. Also,
well, you miss Isser Danielovich, who had a birthday this week as well.
Well, tell us about him.
Isser Danielovich, is that how you pronounce his name?
That sounds good to me.
Got born, immigrated to the U.S., changed his name to Kirk Douglas, and became one of the most famous actors of all time. Another D name.
There you go. That's right. Kirk Douglas. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. How could we forget him?
There you go.
Four D's in a week makes an A, I think.
Don't tell my students that.
No,
they'll start demanding
it.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. There was one that... for music fans, with Frank Zappa. And a couple things happened this week. And when 20 years apart, in 1971, during a set with him, or I guess...
20 years apart? This happened on the same tour, didn't it? The same year.
It seems... well, it was 1971, and then it was
71.
71? Okay, it was the
same.
This
was a weird week in the life of Frank Zappa. Like, even relatively so. Like, Frank Zappa's ordinary, boring week is just like jugglers all behind him doing weird things. This week was particularly odd.
They're on a set, and the place burns to the ground, and they put it into their next
album. This is in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some stupid with a flare gun burned the place to the ground.
Well, no, it's the he's performing in Switzerland, and something happens, and the casino that he's performing in, which, by the way, I love the idea of Frank Zappa being one of those people who just goes from casino to casino performing.
Everybody,
coming up after the Four
Frank
Tops,
Zappa.
It's Frank Zappa. Yeah. It was
and then
deep,
a magic act.
And then a magic act, right, yeah. And then Showgirls. Yeah. Actually, you're probably fine with that. It was Deep Purple was there and wrote the song Smoke on the Water because of because they were at this Frank Zappa concert and someone and then it somehow burned to the ground. around.
But then the same week, like you were saying.
Yeah, 6 days later, he's in London.
He's in London, and he's pushed off the stage by a fan, suffers a broken leg and ankle and a fractured skull.
Yeah.
Not a good week. Does he just stay home then every December?
I would hope
first week?
So,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The tour's off.
So those are things that are kind of good going. Now, so one of the funnier ones came up this week. Well, actually, it's not so much funny. The Great Smog of London. Now, I didn't know about this. 1952. Mm-hmm. This is December 5th, 1952.
I was gonna make a quick joke when you said, "Oh, this is funny." Well, actually, no, it's not. No, I'm it's like, not, this is gonna be a horrible death one. It is a horrible death one. How is this funny?
This is not funny, but you know, it's hard to imagine this smog, which covers this city. It lasts for 4 days, and it's so bad you can't even see more than a few meters. It smells like a sulfur content, like rotten eggs, and yet people still went out and about and. They had 12,000 deaths attributed to this, and 100,000 more made ill. And they said it was because of the coal-burning fireplaces in cold weather.
Yep.
And it's the worst pollution event in the United Kingdom and led to their Clean Air Act, 1956, which is kind of an amazing thing to think about. It's terrible, but it's like, why are people going out in there, but it also says how important regulations matter.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you'll hear, oh, we need less government, we need less regulations, and yet history is writ in these regulations that protect us from these terrible catastrophic events that are, in that case, a very freak one, but still terrible.
Yeah. Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters, I want to talk about, and we've got only got a couple minutes left, but Alfred Eisenstadt's birthday on Wednesday, December 6th.
Yes.
Famous photographer, most famous for taking that famous picture of the sailor in the streets of New York kissing the nurse on VJ Day right after the end of World War II, which, by the way, if you haven't looked at that picture in the last 3 or 4 months, go back and look at it now,
really?
Because you will see it in a different light.
Really?
Yes.
What? Do tell. This is fascinating.
This is a famous photo, which we all love, but it is of a guy running through the streets of New York, grabbing strange women and forcibly kissing them. Like, completely different. I just came across that picture a couple of weeks ago, and I looked at it and I thought, oh man, we've changed in 2 months.
Yeah,
how much have we changed in 2 months? I guarantee you, you're listening out there, go look at that picture. You will not see it the same way.
Wow.
You won't.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Boy.
Mm.
This is how we look at history sometimes in different
completely.
Eyes.
And you were saying this earlier about how things just sort of change overnight.
Oh,
this is an example of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
for
60 years, we've looked at this and like, oh, great.
Isn't
World War II is over.
Of
isn't
course.
It sweet?
Yeah.
No, it's I was
change.
Fascinated observing myself observing that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
But
well,
anyway.
Well, the magic of radio.
Happy birthday, by the way, to Alfred Eisenstadt. But yeah.
Glad you took the picture.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Now in these times it's raised more complex questions.
Questions than answers,
that are important ones.
We've got time for one more. What do you got?
Okay, I think the other one that I would say is about,
you got pages and pages there.
I do. And so I'm trying to think of this one. This is on December 8th.
Okay.
And it is Pretend to Be a Time Traveler Day.
Ah, yes.
Now, just to show you that people are celebrating goofy things sometimes, but yet it's important, and it's about perspective. And just like you said about the Eisenstadt picture,
mm-hmm.
the perspective matters. And this one, the idea is, and there's been lots of TV shows and lots of books written, the idea is to look at your present time and say, if you're from the future, what would you say about the present?
Mm-hmm.
Or likewise, we apply imagination to the application of history to say, like that photograph, looking at it in a different light. So mm-hmm. I think that's just as important. Imagination matters as much as history.
I love it. Scott Washington, another round of History Matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron, as always.